Hello, everyone. Ridiculous Historians, thank you for tuning in. This is the show where we look at some of the strangest, weirdest, most bizarre, and yes, ridiculous people, places, things, and events throughout the span of human civilization.
Animals, vegetables, minerals.
Mm-hmm.
Today, I'm not sure which category this topic falls under, but it's a thing.
Mm-hmm.
It's historically driven.
And it's a fun thing, too.
It is a fun thing. You know what just happened I want to point out, by the way? Ben.
What's that, Noel?
Our super producer, Casey Pegram, said, okay, start talking. Go.
Right.
Go. He literally cracked the whip at us.
You had thrown both Casey and I under the bus before the show started.
Oh, had I?
Yeah, by saying that you were more grateful than anyone for a particularly surprising, amazing thing we have happening in this episode.
That's just me overcompensating. You know this about me, Ben. You know this about me. Do you want? How about this? Let's drop the goods. What do we have today? That's so
right,
cool.
Right, that's correct. Yeah. So we have today an amazing story about an iconic food product that everyone in the U.S. is aware of, and I assume many people throughout the world are aware of this. It is called Spam. But you and I are not exploring this story alone today.
Thank God.
We called in an expert. Folks, we'd like to introduce you to our friend and today's co-host, Annie Reese.
Hi, everybody. Thanks so much for having me, you guys.
Did you know that you were a spam expert, Annie?
Spam-spert.
You know, I'm...
That sounds disgusting, Ben.
That does sound really gross.
Yeah, it didn't work out.
It's like what happens when you open the can and a little bit of the juice squirts in your eye.
Yeah.
Oh, I did not need that mental image.
You did.
No,
you didn't
gosh.
Know it, but you did. Annie, okay, expert, maybe not. I don't know. We're all kind of like armchair experts on a lot of things. We have a good time researching. I don't know how you would get the qualification of spam expert, but I'm going to refer to you as our spam spirit guide today. How about that?
Oh, yeah. I like
how
that.
About spam consultant?
Spam consultant.
I'm going to go
that
spam
consultant.
That
sounds like an email. Like I come in and you're getting a lot of spam.
You sort it out. You make all the filters on your email setup.
I feel like I'm shopping at a grocery store and I'm going, oh, wait, there's so many different things. And then you appear.
Yeah.
And you explain it in a step-by-step basis. And I just want you to know that I am preemptively very appreciative of that.
I feel like I'd be good at that. I'm not sure. But.
You are very efficient.
Thank you.
And you are a co-host of our food podcast, Savor, Food, Lifestyle, Travel. Could you tell us a little bit about Savor?
Yeah. Savor is a show where we explore the science, history, culture of food and drinks and why we like what we like and how you can get more of that. It used to be called Food Stuff. We recently rebranded, but we did a whole episode on spam back when it was old school Food Stuff. And I have a confession to make that Noel and I were talking about briefly before this. Anyone who knows anything about Apple Podcast reviews,
mm-hmm.
you don't read them unless you're a masochist.
Oh, yeah.
Right.
Which I am.
Well, you are a braver soul than me. But one time a friend of mine left a review and was like, you've got to go find it. You've got to read it. And I said, do you know what you're asking me to do?
Mm-hmm.
But eventually I got over it and delved into the nightmare world.
You waded into the shark pit?
Yes,
that is podcast reviews?
I like the reviews. I like reading it.
Oh, that might say something about you. But it might say something about me as well. But one of the number one recurring negative reviews mm-hmm. was that I have never tried any of the foods we're talking about. And when we recorded Spam, I had not tried it.
Yeah.
That was me.
Wow.
You're very open about it on the show, though.
Oh, yeah.
So it seems like a very misplaced complaint. You know, you're copping to it. You're owning up to it. You honestly, maybe it's better that you haven't tasted the stuff. It makes you more objective about it, right?
Have you still true. Not tried it?
I tried it afterwards. I went and got Spam Musubi. And it was lovely.
Spam what?
Musubi.
Musubi.
Ah.
Yeah. It's a very popular... You can find it in convenience stores in Hawaii. Mm-hmm. That's how popular it is. Mm-hmm. And it kind of, to me, looks like nigiri, like sushi, mm-hmm. but it's spam.
Oh, yes. Okay, yeah. I'm familiar with that. And what we know nowadays is that in most grocery stores that carry spam, you won't just see the iconic regular garden variety spam. You'll see stuff like turkey spam, spam with bacon, spam light. And because this is so recognizable, we have to ask ourselves, How did this thing, which people love or hate, how did it become so ubiquitous in the world today? How come everybody, vegetarians, vegans included, know what you're talking about when you say Spam.
Well, first of all, it's good branding, right?
Mm-hmm.
It's fun to say. The sp sound is one of my favorite sounds. And then add the am, and it's just a delight to say out loud. Mm-hmm. And it's meant to be an acronym, but the origin of what this acronym actually might be is a little bit lost to history, or it's kind of a little murky, right?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, there are a couple of stories about where the name came from the people who should know where it came from. One is that it's like spiced ham,
mm-hmm.
or maybe it stands for scientifically processed animal matter.
Animal matter.
Doesn't
animal
that
matter.
Sound
not
so delicious?
Not quite meat.
Animal matter.
And there's others too. There's a shoulder of pork and ham, mm-hmm. and like you said, spiced ham. And then if we want to really get into the weeds, that's utterly not food related. There's Stop Pornography and Abusive Marketing Act. There's also the State Police Association of Massachusetts.
Oh,
lest we forget.
I didn't realize that was in the running.
Schools of the Pacific Atmospheric Monitoring.
Society for the Publication of American Music. Systems Personnel Activity Meeting, that's from Yale.
And my personal favorite, Society for Palm Top Advancement Through Meetings.
Oh.
Only through meetings.
That seems like a fascinating use of time. But okay, so Spam, it dates back to 1937 in a town called Austin, Minnesota, a.k.a. Spamtown, USA.
Mm-hmm. And it was made by Hormel Foods. They initially pitched it as a way to help busy homemakers serve quick and easy pork dishes without having to slave away for hours in front of an oven.
But in like an Edward Bernays-style stroke of genius, it also did a thing where Hormel, the guy, had a slaughterhouse, and he had these byproduct parts that weren't very sellable, mm-hmm. a.k.a. the pork shoulder. We now kind of dig pork shoulder. That's like a thing that's like a delicacy, right? Or like people eat it at the Thanksgiving table or whatever, right?
People are into it now, yeah.
For barbecue, I think, right?
Yeah.
Exactly.
Definitely.
So, but he had this surplus of pork shoulder. It was not a popular cut. And so he wanted to figure out a way to make this, as you say, Ben, convenient product that could be marketed to homemakers who were all about canned food at the time. It was all the rage.
And they haven't really futzed with the ingredients too much. You know, it's strange because when you think of shelf stable being the term for stuff that can stay at room temperature without going bad, mm-hmm. or I guess getting worse than it originally was. When you think of that, you usually think of a ton of chemicals with so many syllables in the name that it sounds like a spell from Harry Potter, right?
Right.
But in the case of Spam, they have, what, 6 ingredients? It's just pork/ham, salt, water, potato starch, sugar, and, of course, sodium nitrite.
Of course, for color.
Yes, that captivating pinkish hue. It's a great way to describe it. So Spam didn't immediately become this worldwide sensation. There were other things happening across the planet that eventually would lead to Spam becoming like the king of canned meat. And it goes into an angle that a lot of people might not be aware of. It goes to tensions between the U.S. and Japan during the 1930s. There's a guy, Donald M. Shug, at the University of Hawaii, who published a paper on this. And he says that the U.S. military began to view Hawaii's fishing fleet as a serious threat to national security. So, you know, at this time, Hawaii is still not a U.S. state, right?
Mm-hmm.
So when the Japanese government arranged for many of Hawaii's Japanese fishermen to attend fishing schools in Japan, there were concerns that these fishermen were actually being interrogated by Japanese Navy officials.
Yeah, but to what end, Ben? To what end?
So this eventually, okay, we'll walk through this real quick.
Mm-hmm.
So in 1940, 3 years after the invention of Spam, suspicions about the loyalty of Japanese immigrants resulted in the implementation of a federal statute that stopped or banned fishing vessels of 5 tons or more from obtaining licenses unless the person who owned the vessel was a U.S. citizen. The next year, 1941, they passed a law prohibiting, quote, aliens from fishing with gill, purse, or these different kinds of nets within 1 mile of shore because they wanted to preserve the fishery resources for native Hawaiians and U.S. citizens. This ended careers of a lot of people in the fishing industry in Hawaii. And then that meant that without Spam, these other canned meats and sardines, the economy would have collapsed. They had to find something to replace this massive fishing industry.
And let's not forget about Executive Order 9066, where Franklin Roosevelt basically banned Japanese Americans, citizens who were occupying military zones and had them put in internment camps. So this whole anti-Japanese sentiment was wide rife in the country. And weirdly enough, it trickled down to this canned meat product.
And of course, these tensions, these discriminatory laws and economic practices were only ripples of a much larger event on the horizon, which is World War II. And when the war begins, Spam also has a part to play.
Yeah, it does. Because if you remember, Spam was pretty new around the time that America was getting involved in World War II. But it was a popular option for soldiers because getting fresh meat or fresh anything to Hawaii was difficult for American soldiers stationed there. So the U.S. government was sending Spam, or it might not have been exactly Spam.
Wasn't it just kind of like leftover meat parts that they had that they shipped to Hormel and then they made them a Spam-like stuff?
Yeah. So Hormel's canning them, but it probably wasn't exactly what Spam is today or what we think of it today. And it was cheap, non-perishable, could withstand all sorts of weather conditions, but soldiers weren't exactly happy with Spam. They were sometimes eating it three times a day, so I'm sure they were tired of it. Some of them even wrote hate mail to Hormel, which the company kept in a, quote, scurrilous file. And some of my favorite disses are, quote, meatloaf without basic training, ham that didn't pass its physical, and the real reason war was hell.
That's great. That's fantastic.
It's pretty harsh. Those are some sick burns. Do you think that this would have been like branded as Spam? Would it have come in the tins like with the logo on it and everything? Because you kind of made a point on your episode of Food Stuff back when it was called that, that almost like the proper Spam kind of got a bad rap because this was like almost like bootleg Spam, but it was being manufactured in Hormel's canning facilities. So I'm wondering if they like branded it differently or called it like MRE Spam or something, or I don't know. Did you find anything about that in your research?
I didn't find much about that at all. In fact, the fact that it wasn't Spam was sort of a deep cut.
It was kind of lost on people, clearly,
right.
Because
yeah.
they were writing those letters, those angry letters.
Yeah.
Oh, and it's also, you know, it reminds me of the kind of people that write mean things about podcasts. You know?
Well, it's also, in the case of Spam, there's an interesting linguistic thing that occurs because they're using it as one word to describe this umbrella of processed meat. Sorry, the image just got weird for me.
Yeah.
But, you know, it's similar to the way that instead of people saying search for something on the internet, they say Google it. Or instead of make a copy, Xerox this.
Yeah.
Right? And it seems pretty certain in the history that only a few soldiers received genuine Spam. But because there had already been this canned meat product around since the late 30s, that's just what people called it. So maybe Spam got an unfair mark, a scurrilous mark,
on
its reputation.
I wonder if it's possible, too, that because Spam was new and at the time there was such a push to be like right behind the boys and, you know, all American soldiers and America's doing great in the war.
Annie is throwing some great propaganda.
Yeah.
She's got these tiny American flags that she's gently twisting between her thumb and forefinger.
She shot off a firecracker.
I always come with props.
It's very true.
But I wonder if maybe they made a miscalculation and thought, oh, Spam is supporting the soldiers and this will really get our name out there. Mm-hmm. And it did. But not in the way that they were hoping.
Right.
Oh, man. So you think this is like a ham-fisted attempt at a PR kind of stunt?
Spam-fisted attempt.
That's even better, Annie. You took it to the next level like you do.
I'm just curious if there was an element of that behind it, because I could see the calculation there.
Because it is free advertising when you think about it. That's a good point, because these soldiers from the U.S. are traveling around the world. They're going to Europe. They're going to the Pacific. They're going to various different islands, and they're bringing Spam along with them.
Yeah, and it's a government contract, so you're getting paid to do it. I bet there was something like that going on. And the backlash from the soldiers generated one of my favorite quotes about Spam, because there are a lot of excellent quotes about Spam. Hormel describes it as meat with a pause button, which I love.
I'm going to need you to unpack that for us a little bit. Meat with a pause button, meaning like it never goes bad? Or is that the implication?
Yeah, like where you put it in that can, it's like a time capsule. Yeah. It's just going to stay the same.
I got it.
Pushing pause. Another one of my favorite quotes comes from a 1945 New Yorker piece, and it was all about as a profile on J. Hormel. And in the article, the author wrote, "I got the distinct impression that being responsible for Spam might be too great a burden on any one man."
I love that idea. Sort of being cursed by the success of Spam.
Yeah.
So is it that the soldiers genuinely didn't like the taste, or do you think it's really more because, as you said, they were eating it so often?
I think it was a couple of things. I think it was they were eating it so often. They were eating it cold. Mm-hmm. And one of the reasons I found when looking into this question of why Spam is so popular in Hawaii and in like other Asian Pacific countries is because not only were they kind of their hand was forced because of the things you were talking about earlier where Japanese immigrants couldn't fish. Mm-hmm. They also were incorporating Spam in ways that were delicious. Like they were putting them in recipes that they made anyway. They were adding them into Spam fried rice or Spam and eggs. Soldiers were just eating them cold out of the tin. I think I have very limited experience with Spam. I don't know about the two of you, but
Limited. Yeah, purposely.
I will make a confession that Casey and Annie probably know. You probably don't know. I received in my early years working, when we all started working together, I received an MVP award. Do you remember this, Annie? It's just three cans of Spam that have been wrapped together and artistically designed so that parts of the Spam logo say MVP or something like that.
Mm-hmm.
And it's one of the most prestigious awards I've ever received.
Oh, yeah.
It's also still in our office in case of an emergency.
Yes. In case of a trophy emergency.
In case we're trapped here and we have to eat Spam.
Oh.
Yeah.
Okay.
I think about that. But the I might have just a little bit more familiarity with this stuff because in Boy Scouts, we would camp a lot and we would have to eat that stuff. And we tried to find different ways to make it taste interesting, so it's not the same old thing.
But it's already spiced. I mean, what else does it need?
It's got potato starch.
Yeah, right? The secret ingredient.
Sodium nitrate. Mm. I don't know what else you're missing.
But yeah, I think it's a thing that a lot of people did. As you said, they assimilated Spam.
Yes. And to get back to the point, they were putting it in things that I think were probably definitely much more flavorful.
Mm-hmm.
And so they had a positive experience with Spam on Hawaii after soldiers left. A lot of soldiers, when they went home, they brought with them their distaste.
They were also turning Spam into Spaminade, right? I mean, they were flooded and inundated with all this Spam. Mm-hmm. And because they couldn't get protein from fishing, and didn't the U.S. kind of like send them a lot of the Spam? Because they had like a surplus of the stuff.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
And that wasn't just during World War II.
Right.
That continued during the Korean War as well, I believe.
Yes, because Spam was included in a lot of foreign aid packages. Mm-hmm. And during the Korean War, people made something that I'm not entirely sure what's in there. And other folks weren't either, but they called it Army Stew. And Spam was one of the ingredients that we do know was featured in Army Stew.
Army Stew.
Mm-hmm. And to this day, Korea is Spam's second largest market, and it's a popular gift on Lunar New Year in that country.
Oh, wow.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, that's cool. Do they have different varieties of Spam in different countries, like different flavors and such?
I couldn't speak to specifics, but I do know that there's a wide variety of Spam flavors, and that it does vary in different countries. But Hawaii, for sure, is the biggest market.
Yeah, do you have some stats for us about that?
Do I ever. And I'm not sure. I didn't know that Spam had this association with Hawaii until I did that the research for that episode, but I think it's pretty common knowledge, at least here in the United States. But Hawaiians consume about 5 million pounds of Spam every year, which is about 2 million, a little over 2 million kilograms. And on average, that's about 3 pounds per person or about 1.3 kilograms a year.
I think around 6 cans a year for every man, woman, child, any type of human is consuming about 6 cans of Spam a year.
We completely forgot. Hey, Casey.
Yes.
Do you have any experience or familiarity with Spam?
Just the Weird Al song, the REM parody.
Oh yeah.
Wait, which one is that?
Spam and the Place Where You Live. You know that one?
I don't.
I know that one.
That's a deep Weird Al cut.
Well, it's Stand by REM, but
it's
Spam.
Yeah, I know Stand. You know? I was not aware there was a... Is this like classic Weird
it's
like, Al?
Yeah, mid-8. I mean, it's whenever Stand was out. So,
how about that? I didn't know. Okay, Casey on the Case, turning
thank
us
you,
on.
Casey on the Case. I like that.
Yep.
It has a sound effect and everything, Annie.
Oh, yeah. I mean, it's got to. Because he's on the case.
We love being able to drop the sound cue so multiple times.
Sure.
We'll do that. Yeah. Well, just listen after Casey spins this into the Spam into gold.
I'm gonna be shocked. Hawaii also has what looks to be one of the festivals I would just be over the moon to attend. Mm-hmm. It's called Spam Jam Festival in Waikiki, and I was looking at pictures for it. There's just mascots dressed as all the different types of Spam. The Spam eating contest. I think somebody got married there once. It looks awesome, and I would love to go. And Spam is also called Hawaiian steak, which I wasn't sure if it was a joke or not when I was reading that. In the state, they call it Hawaiian steak.
Okay, so actual native Hawaiians call it that.
From what I understand, from what the internet tells me, yes.
Okay.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, I'm trying to figure out if we can say that or if that's mocking it.
Yeah, Ray, I'm not here to mock.
Surely they also have steak in Hawaii.
Surely they do, but probably not.
They prefer Spam.
Yeah, I mean,
I'm sure steak is certainly much more expensive than it is here on the mainland.
That's a very good
point.
That
is true, yeah.
Yeah, we kind of take for granted the fact that they are sort of isolated and require all of their goods to be shipped in, literally, you know, by plane or by sea.
Yeah. Which makes things expensive.
So the legacy of Spam established during World War II and the Korean War takes this canned food product, this animal matter from Minnesota to its new home in, you said, Hawaii is by far the largest market. Korea is second.
Mm-hmm.
That should surprise a lot of people, right? Because Spam feels like such an American food because of the way it spread across the planet.
Yeah, it surprised me. I do find it really fascinating that it's so localized. It's so specific where people love it.
Mm-hmm.
And then I feel like the rest of the world and the rest of the U.S., we're kind of like, meh, that's that weird food thing. What is that exactly? But I would like to mention that there is an amazing, I've never been, but listeners have sent like some stuff they've gotten from this museum in Austin, Minnesota, which is, like you said, Spamtown USA. And if anyone has the opportunity, I highly recommend it. It's hands-on. It's,
you get to touch the Spam?
I think you mean hams-on, right?
Nice. You get to race to see how many cans of fake Spam that you can make in a minute.
It's practice Spam?
Yeah, like you're trying to shove it into the can and you're competing against like a robot.
So it's kind of like the world of Coca-Cola in Atlanta, but like with Spam.
Yes.
I would hope that you would have the opportunity to sample different types of Spam, the Spams of the world.
A la World of Coke.
That would be super cool. We didn't really talk about this, I think it's fine to save it for the end. Spam is cooked in the can.
Yeah, the way it's made.
Isn't that weird? That struck me as super odd. And there's a reason for that, right, Annie?
Yeah, and it has to do with that whole shelf stable thing because you wanna mix the meat in a vacuum and vacuum seal it and then cook the whole can. That's part of the whole meat with a pause button thing. It's so nothing gets in there that you don't want, unless maybe you don't want the Spam, but that's a whole different argument. And when you cook it, the meat breaks down and you're left with a little loaf of Spam and some juices. Mm-hmm. We're not making it sound very appetizing.
Semi-gelatinous almost.
Mm-hmm.
Not as gelatinous as it could be if it didn't have that additive, right? Because wasn't there one of those additives that keeps it from forming like a gross congealed layer of goo on the top?
Mm-hmm.
To make something that's already not super appetizing, practically inedible.
And I'll tell you guys, I make a mean Spam fried rice if you ever want to come over.
I'd be cool with that. If you cut it into little cubes like that.
Right.
It's like you hide it. It's like the way I feed my kid vegetables, you know? I chop the carrots up so small you can't even see them. I mean, Spam, for all intents and purposes, probably tastes fine, but the texture of it and the look of it and the idea of it, just give me the gross outs.
It's the fact that it comes out can-shaped, I think, for a lot of people. You see the rills in the can. And
yeah.
Yeah. But not everybody hated it, right? We said Hawaiians welcomed it with open arms. People in parts of the Pacific Rim also really enjoyed it. And the Russians liked it. They called it Roosevelt sausage.
To be fair, Russian food's pretty gross.
I feel like in terms of cuisine, Russians are very familiar with a lot of canned meat products, you know?
Yeah.
Like anchovies, different potted meats. So maybe it was just something that already seemed familiar to them.
Okay, and first of all, for any Russian listeners out there, I want to apologize for insulting the entire cuisine of Russia, but I just never really run across Russian food that was particularly appetizing to me. It seems like a lot of cabbage, a lot of like
borscht.
Lard-based things and borscht and, you know, very rustic kind of
stuff. There's a great Russian restaurant up north of Atlanta where we are based, and I would highly recommend checking it out. And actually, you know, in defense of Russian food, this is totally non-Spam related, but in defense of Russian food, make friends with someone who cooks Russian food themselves, and it'll be amazing.
Yeah.
There's always like 30 dishes of things.
Yeah. I would imagine that there's probably a lot of food that is historically Russian that is, we just have lost.
Yeah.
We've forgotten that it is, or we've made it our own thing. I'm sure there's, I'm not thinking of any right now, but I'm sure there's good Russian food.
And we do like a chicken Kiev.
Yeah, we could do a Russian food update too. I'm sure we're going to get some emails about this one. Perhaps one of the most famous Russian fans of Spam was Soviet Premier Nikita Khrushchev.
Oh, yeah.
He wrote about Spam in his memoirs called Khrushchev Remembers. Not the most amazingly innovative
name. Sounds like a threat, though. Khrushchev remembers.
Yeah, he never forgets.
Yeah, he probably had some threats in there. He probably took some shots. But in the memoir, he specifically shouts out Spam by saying, quote, "There were many jokes going around in the army, some of them of color, of American Spam. It tastes good nonetheless. Without Spam, we would not feed our army. We would have lost our most fertile land."
Most fertile land?
Da.
Got it.
Who was that Russian guy?
It was Khrushchev.
It was his ghost of back Khrushchev. From the grave.
Terrible. Oh my gosh, I've got to practice on the accents, folks. But he raises an interesting point. You know, that similar to what was happening with war survivors in the countries on the Pacific Rim, there were people who would have starved without access to this easily transportable, infinitely durable food.
Yeah, kind of along the same lines. Margaret Thatcher called it a wartime delicacy. She called Spam a wartime delicacy. And it's interesting, I think, because there is an odd sense of nostalgia for Spam that a lot of people have. And I feel that it needed time to get away from the war, the direct aftermath. Mm-hmm. But then after that, people had this association with Spam. It was there for me when I needed it.
Oh.
Yeah.
Well, it's also one of those things where it's like, it hasn't changed much. The branding is the same. It's, people have fond memories of that. And they like the idea of, you know, everything in this fast-paced, mixed-up world of ours, everything's always changing a mile a minute, but we can rely on Spam.
Yes. The Spam never changes.
It's like our true north.
There we go. The true north of canned animal matter. I do have a question. This is something that I was wondering if we could explore together. How did Spam also become a term for deluges of bizarre emails?
Well, Ben, it has to do with Monty Python.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
That sketch, right?
Yes. Uh-huh. Can you describe the sketch?
We should just play a clip of it.
What you got, then? and spam? Egg, bacon, and spam? Egg, bacon, sausage, and spam? Spam, bacon, sausage, and spam? Spam, egg, spam, spam, bacon, and spam? Spam, 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 egg, and spam? Spam, 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 baked beans, spam, 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 and spam? Oh, lobster thermidor, crevettes with mayonnaise sauce, garnish with truffle pate brandy, and a bag of dot dot and spam. Have you got anything without spam in it? Well, spam, egg, sausage, and spam. There's not got much spam in it. I don't want any spam.
The end credits for that episode, by the way, include spam with every company member, spam Terry Jones, Terry Spam Sausage, spam Egg, spam Gillian.
And just the idea of just like inundating you with something.
Yeah, like annoying you, always kind of just blaring in the back of your mind. It has no appreciable content. It's omnipresent. But as you can imagine, mm-hmm. Hormel doesn't exactly love that association.
No way.
Yeah. No way. I think they've even tried to, I think there was some very quickly defeated legal way they tried to.
Well, it's not like anybody branded spam. It's just in the zeitgeist. People just like toss it around, you know? No one owns it.
I'm not sure.
Who are they going to sue? Like everyone?
Exactly. I'm not sure what they thought. They could just send out a message to everyone, a spam message, and say, please. Use a different term for this, what this thing is that we're sending.
And usually when people or institutions or companies attempt to do something like that, mm-hmm. they just make the problem much, much worse, such as when a celebrity politely asks the internet to take down a photo of them. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
So they've probably done the math and they've thought, if we ask people to not do this, it's not going to work. I know there's some... there's a bit of a renaissance sometimes for spam every so often in more high-end restaurants, right?
Yes. I saw this a lot when I was in San Francisco a year or so ago. And there's one restaurant, I think it's called Leo Leo Yacht Club, something like that. Mm-hmm. And they have a lot of spam options on their menu. And it's a very nice restaurant.
But is it Hawaiian, like,
yes,
themed?
It is.
So, like, what's this Loco Moco I keep hearing about? Moco
Loco?
Loco Moco?
Loco is good.
It's like spam with gravy or something.
Yes.
Right? With rice, maybe?
Mm-hmm. It's rice, spam, gravy, and a fried egg. You can also get it with ground beef or other meats.
Or a hamburger patty. Even,
yes.
Right?
Yeah. So that's what I had. I didn't have spam Loco Moco.
Oh, okay. Okay.
I did have the other one, and it was
but
very
that's interesting
very good.
That there's, like, high-end Hawaiian restaurants that still use this pretty cheap, not very nutritional canned meat. And speaking of nutrition, just want to point out real quick that one of these cans of Spam is 12 ounces, and it apparently contains about 6 servings, mm-hmm. Which contain... So the 6 servings in a can, which,
yes.
Come on, really?
Yeah, you're eating
a very
small
can. You're eating the can. And it contains 25% of the daily recommended fat intake for the U.S. and 33% of the sodium. So
it's not a health food?
No,
no.
Apparently
what?
Not.
But, there's another stat. Americans eat approximately 3.8 cans per second. I have a problem with that stat because I think Hawaii is throwing off the average.
I would agree. I can't really recall spam ever coming up in my childhood as an option.
Well, you clearly didn't have elderly parents like I did.
Oh, really?
Because they, you know, remembered it fondly from the wartime.
Were they spam fans?
No, my parents weren't alive in World War II, but their parents were. Mm-hmm. And so it was something, you know, a lot of people that went through the Depression, they like, mm-hmm. they learned how to hoard properly.
Right.
And they learned how to like be frugal and like use canned meats and things. Like mm-hmm. I remember growing up and my grandpapa would make brains and eggs,
mm-hmm.
which
Whoa,
is like
really?
Brain. It's literally, I didn't even realize this until many years later. It's like cow brains and mm-hmm. eggs, but it was like a cheap part that you could just, you know, added a little texture and a little flavor to your eggs. Same with spam. Or something called liver pudding or Ooh. Scrapple is what it's known as in the Midwest, like up in
Dutch,
Philadelphia,
German,
yeah,
Pennsylvania area.
Yeah, exactly. I liked all of those things and didn't think anything of it. But they're both kind of these congealed meat cubes that you then slice up and fry like spam. So there's other analogs to spam for sure.
Absolutely.
These are foods that come about out of necessity, you know, and I think necessity and nostalgia are inextricably intertwined here. So I guess the next question would be, what is the future of spam? Are they slowing up? Are they speeding up?
I think they're in a good place. I definitely don't think that they need to be worried. Hawaiians love it.
Yeah,
they're
going to
keep the market going. Sure. Like we said, these fancier restaurants, and this is a trend we see a lot, where the combination of high-end and low-end, mm-hmm. I've seen around Atlanta government cheese at really nice restaurants
right.
pretty frequently. So I don't think they have to be worried. What they should be worried about is theft.
That's right. Okay, mm-hmm. Can you tell us a little bit about this?
Yes.
I can't speak for you, but I love a good heist story. Do you love a good heist story?
No, you were wrong. You shouldn't have spoken to me. Right. Yeah, of course I love a good heist story, especially when it involves an absurd potted meat.
A spam heist story it's up there. That's a good one. Lately, there have been a spate of spam thefts in Hawaii.
Ooh, nice.
In one account, three women filled a cart with 18 cans of spam at a drugstore and made a dash for the exit. But this customer, he just planted himself in front of the doors and said, "What are you doing with that spam?" He didn't say that, but along those lines. And they made a run for it, and they did not succeed in their heist. But enough people have that now some stores have started storing their cans of spam locked in those plastic cases that are typically used for expensive items.
Electronics.
Razors,
sure.
Yeah. Now spam is back there. You have to go ask for a key for your spam.
The reason for this is super interesting. It has to do with a change in the law in Hawaii, where I think in the past, theft up to $300 was considered a felony, mm-hmm. and then they raised it to $700. So you could steal up to $700 worth of spam, and it would be just a misdemeanor if they caught you.
Right.
But you also, it's like, how are you going to, you know, track down the perp if you don't catch them doing it?
Mm-hmm.
And the fact that this famous spam shelf stability means that you don't have to fence it right away, right? You can, like, sit right. on your stash for a while. And this great article from Grub Street that you turned mm-hmm. us on to, Annie, Hawaiian grocery stores reportedly overrun with spam bandits.
Mm-hmm.
Spammed it. It's like an epidemic. And it's a lot, largely, the article conjectures, folks are stealing the stuff so that they can flip it mm-hmm. and buy drugs. Mm-hmm. But it's so flippable because the market for spam in Hawaii is like through the roof.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah, Tina Yamaki, the president of Retail Merchants of Hawaii, calls it organized retail crime. And she's spoken a lot about the spam black market and how you can buy spam out of somebody's car, like out of their trunk.
Wow. Usually if I see somebody with a ton of canned meat in their trunk standing by the side of the road, my first instinct isn't to ask them how much, what the going price is.
You clearly are not a spam fan, Ben.
I'm not built. You know what? I can say safely I'm a fan, but I don't think I'm built to be a spam tycoon. I hope they're out there somewhere in Hawaii. I hope there's a black market spam tycoon, and I hope that you are listening to this show. We want to
hear. May God have mercy on your soul.
May God have mercy on your spam.
That's right.
I think we all want to hear spam recipes from listeners if you're a fan of spam.
Well, speaking of spam recipes, we talked about like how the Hormel company is doing and moving mm-hmm. forward or whatever. Mm-hmm. Well, they've really embraced a lot of this kitsch surrounding spam and like the musubis and all that. Mm-hmm. And they have like recipes on their site for this fantastic National Geographic article by April Fulton shows some images of some of the stuff that I'm talking about. One of them is a Hello Kitty spam musubi that they show you how to make. They also have a national tour called the Tiny House of Sizzle Tour. Where they are shopping around the whole U.S. of A, a spicy spam breakfast burrito recipe made by their chef, Jordan Andino. And it's like a traveling like spam food truck, sort of the way you see the Oscar Mayer Wiener mobile or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, spam's not slowing down. They're rising to the occasion. They're adapting to the times.
Yeah, they're adapting times. They always have. I want to show you guys one of my favorite pictures. So, Annie, on this show, we love vintage advertisements.
Oh, I do too.
So
that's pretty excellent.
Spam Dandy mm-hmm. is one of my favorites. And they have these collections of all their ads that have the exact nostalgia tone. For anybody who enjoyed our previous episode on, what was it, Noel? Was it Meat Jello? Remember that?
Oh, yeah.
Is it Aspics?
Aspics, yeah. And also just like various savory gelatin dishes that were very popular as like centerpieces and made you seem like you really had your homemaking skills in order. And Spam, I'm sure, it's all part of this like food of the future movement.
Yeah.
The idea that, oh, we'll just eat out of tins and that's super progressive and like shows that we have money or something, even though it was cheap and gelatin was cheap. Mm-hmm. It was a very odd dichotomy and really interesting to look back on.
And savory gelatin just... when you see pictures of those things at the center of a dining table, it strikes me as Lovecraftian. I'm going to be honest. It's something from like the darkness beyond the stars.
Oh, I love looking at a good aspic or meat jelly. they're hilarious. And they are that interesting intersection of, at the time, if you didn't have a lot of money, you wanted to put a lot of work and artistry into a thing to show that you were successful and that you could afford to do this. But it was a cheap food thing. It was, everyone was participating in kind of this masquerade, this facade. And Spam is a similar food in that it does have that futuristic, it'll last forever vibe, but it's very cheap. And during the recent recession in 2008, because of this, Spam saw an increase of sales of 10% because, it is a food that people can't afford. And there aren't strict numbers, but according to the Hormel website, they estimate 12.8 cans of Spam are consumed every second across the planet.
Mostly in Hawaii.
And that's, that's not even to speak of the ones that are just hoarded in a bomb shelter.
That's right.
Or in the trunk of a Cadillac driving somewhere near you.
I love it.
Well, I don't know about you guys, but I'm filled with gratitude at the end of this episode for you, Annie. My heart is just bursting out of my chest with gratitude, clearly more gratitude than either Ben or Casey are capable of mustering. Hey. So I win!
Annie, I wasn't really listening when Noel was talking, but I do want to say thank you so much for coming on the episode. I'm kidding, Noel. I think we're both really happy that you took the time here. And taught us so much about Spam. I'm wondering if I'm going to cook some this weekend. We've talked so much about it. I feel like we've almost, in a way, consumed it ourselves just by exploring this concept.
I think we should do a potted meat, like, potluck.
Let's do it. Let's
get it. It would be a potluck,
potted meat luck. This is the office to host such an event. There would be very creative concoctions.
Behind the curtain, folks, we recently hung out after work and had a game night where we learned, well, I think you already knew all the games, Annie, but we both learned some really cool stuff. So shout out to Dixit, right?
Dixit. Fun to say, fun to play. That should be their tagline.
That
they can
should
have it.
Be their tagline.
They can have it.
You're going to give it to them for free?
Well, I don't know. They can send me some swag. Okay. Some mugs or something. You guys can have
Dixit
it.
It
was so fun. It was really a joy, and it was a successful game night, and I look forward to doing it again. But I also look forward to having you, Annie, on the show again.
Yes, please.
Yes, please. This was so much fun.
Yes, we're so glad you enjoyed it. I'm a huge fan of food history, as you know from some of our works outside of this show. Mm-hmm. But in the meantime, before you make another return appearance, where can our listeners hear more of your work with How Stuff Works?
You can find me over at Savor Podcast. You're internet humans, I'm sure you can find it. But I will say it's Savor without the U. So for the non-American listeners among you. And I also am a co-host of a show called Stuff Mom Never Told You, which you can Google right away and you'll find it.
Fantastic shows. Do check them out. They're shows that I personally listen to in my free time. So, I don't want to fanboy out too much, but maybe I'll ask for your autograph after the show.
I definitely listened to the Spam episode today and cribbed most of my notes for this episode from that episode. So this is where
this is like a weird Ouroboros meta.
Yeah. The snake that consumes its tail.
Mm-hmm.
And we have more tales to tell. We had earlier said that we would be exploring some more spooky stories as we lead up to Halloween. So tune in next time when we delve into the strange story of, mummies.
Yeah, Mexican mummies, to be precise.
Mm-hmm.
And in the meantime, I'd like to thank Casey, our super producer, Alex Williams, who composed our theme, research associates Christopher Hasiotis and Eves Jeffcoat. And Ben, as usual, I'd like to throw a little thanks your way, my friend, for just being you.
I would like to treat that thanks like a boomerang, add some extra thanks to it, and make sure it gets right back to you.
Why do you always have to one-up me on the thanks, man?
I'm not, man. I just like hanging out.
All right, cool. We'll see you next time, folks.